Okay, welcome back. Hour number two this evening, and it's a very special day in a way that I think many of you will relate to. And if you don't know anything about the wonderful William Tompkins, I hope this hour will encourage you to go listen to some of the programs that are right on the homepage at Rents.com. Bill Tompkins moved on, as it were, to a better place 1 year ago today. And I firmly believe that Bill is beyond happy where he is, in absolute cosmic, universal, blissful happiness, peace, and is well engaged with his mind, doing things that he wants to do. I died once, and I didn't believe it, but the light exists. And when you start to go into that light, the feeling of euphoria and happiness is indescribable. And I think of Bill having left us so suddenly a year ago today. And let me say right now hello to his wonderful bride, Mary, who is listening. Never a finer example of a true partnership on this planet than Bill and Mary. Bill is, without question, a hero. He's a man who stepped forward after having lived a life that spanned early Hollywood in the most amazing period and epoch of those days, all the way through World War II as a very young man at top secret level naval work in San Diego, and after the war went to work for Douglas Aircraft, which became McDonnell Douglas Missiles and Space, TRW, Thompson Ramo Wooldridge. My father was the public relations director of Douglas Aircraft and then McDonnell for 17 years, I think. And they were there at the same time. And those were days of ultra-secret compartmentalized work on so many different areas that were, by our standards even today, astonishing. Bill lived into his 90s, was still addressing and appearing at UFO and paranormal conferences. I think that kind of came on later in his last few years. He got to be pretty well known from his work here and his sharing with everyone around the world of material that just really wasn't supposed to be talked about. But he was given the green light to go ahead. He wasn't breaking any classified rules and regulations. He was told, it's okay, go ahead. He said, I'm under no restrictions. So that was remarkable in and of itself. Now, making this all possible, two gentlemen, Frank Chile, who has been producing programs here for a couple of years now at least, he brought Bill forward along with George Filer. And George was, I think, involved with listening to this on a first-time basis like I was, and was just as amazed as so many people were around the world that were listening. Frank, are you there, first of all?
Yes, I am. Thank you, Jeff. And it's good joining you and George tonight to commemorate the tribute to Bill.
Yeah, I hope I covered it okay in that ad-lib opening.
You certainly did. The only thing he would probably want to add is the most brilliant man he ever met was Kurt Debus, and he functioned with Kurt Debus on four programs at NASA that were very, very eminent, very, very highly...
Well, I was going to get into that a little later, but you're right. Let's mention it now. Dr. Kurt Debus was the director of the German rocket program at Peenemünde, the director. One of his star, brilliant scientists was Wernher von Braun. Through paperclip, after the war ended, Debus, von Braun, and thousands, I think almost 10,000 German scientists and engineers and their staffs were brought over here under that incredible trade, which involved allowing the leadership of much of the Third Reich to emigrate to Argentina, Uruguay, and places in South America, some in Chile. So there was a trade-off. It was technology. But yes, Dr. Kurt Debus, a German Some would say a Nazi. I don't play those games. The man was a German. Less than 10% of the German military were even involved with the party. They wanted nothing to do with it. They were protecting their homeland. Dr. Kurt Debus was the director of NASA for 13 years here when it started. We had a German program, otherwise known as NASA. All Germans were in key positions, all of them. George, are you there?
I'm here.
Welcome back.
Well, thank you. Left California and all the smoke and are back now. Well, the virus and so on.
Smoke is still here. It came rolling in again today, and masks everywhere, all over town. And my air conditioning is now completely gone. It has to go into the shop on Thursday. It started to fade out about 2 months ago, and it's every day it gets a little hotter when it's supposed to be cold, and now it's full-on hot when it's supposed to be cold. So anyway, not fun. George, when you began to hear Bill Tompkins and his revelations, you didn't have too much foreknowledge of what was coming. What were your thoughts when you were hearing all this?
Well, if you don't mind me going back to how it all began.
Sure, please.
In 2011, I was giving talk at the MUFON symposium, and Dr. Bob Wood had encouraged me to speak about Mars, and I gave a talk with about 150 slides of Mars. And
I've seen that on YouTube, haven't I?
I guess so. But in any case, the idea was to show that there was probably life on Mars, or at least in the past, if not even now. And after the briefing, Bob Woods came up with a couple different people, or at least this group came around me. A couple of them were from NASA, had flown in from Dallas and said, yes, you're right on with the information. We just can't give it. And then Bob Woods introduced Bill Tompkins to me. And then Bill started talking about UFOs in Germany and how he had been a model builder and done all these wonderful things during the Second World War and worked for Admiral Rick Abada, and that various Navy spies that we had went into Germany and came back with all this astounding information and possibility of advanced weapons and so on, not to mention the UFOs, and that they were actually flying and so on. And, you know, I didn't know whether to be blunt about it to believe them, but I did trust Dr. Bob Wood, who was a friend of mine, and I knew I'd worked for McDonnell Douglas and so on, and he verified that Tompkins had, in fact, worked for these companies. And interestingly enough, I had a good friend who knew Donald Douglas, the owner of, and you know, the original.
See, the old man or the kid?
Well, both in a sense. Mm-hmm. In any case, they verified that, you know, they were working on UFOs at Douglas as well, that they wanted to get this new technology. In other words, things started falling together, that what Bill was saying was verified by other people, and I think that's the important part of the story, is that his story is so far in advance, it's hard to believe, but we're picking up others who verify the fact that he was working for these companies, working on the Apollo mission, working on the Thor missions, those kind of things that we, of course, knew existed. Uh-huh. And that it was pretty obvious that our aviation companies were, you know, now leading the world based on a lot of the work that, in effect, he was doing. And the people don't realize this, but a lot of what the Germans had come over here that and were helping us now, in effect, working against the Russians, you know. A lot's been going on all through the years. It's been kept quiet and certainly secret and not allowed us to have that information. Even when you're in the Air Force and so on, you know, you come up with new craft and so on, but you don't know, you know, how it was made and et cetera.
Right.
So it's a, he was kind of a spark plug in giving us all this excellent knowledge of the advanced craft that we had in space and so on. And I really thank him for that.
Right. Frank, when did you first run across Bill Tompkins?
Well, I remember George telling me about having met him through the introduction by Dr. Bob Wood. And I remember George saying that he was in the process of having a book written, but nothing ever came of it. And I kept being frustrated, sensing this guy's got an incredible story. And I said, is it possible to get his phone number? I would like to reach out to him. And George got me his number, either gave me Bob Wood's number, and I got Bill's number from Bob Wood. And I reached out to Bill, and we connected immediately. And he started sharing information with me. And I said, would you be willing to go on a radio program and discuss this? And he said, I think I would. And that's when we first introduced him to your program, Jeff. And he just loved it and ran with it.
I don't know how many visits there were. There were just hours and hours. There must be 20, 25 hours of radio that
we have.
Yes,
I think so.
It's wonderful.
I remember Bob
material.
Would send me a package that Bill wanted me to have. It was his personal copy of 25 different advanced propulsion systems that he was working on at Douglas Aircraft in the early 50s. And it had his personal notes. It had his name on the document, personal notes. And German scientists that were part of the secret think tank that Bill was working with and Bob Wood was aware of, and he wanted me to have this 300-page document, and we shared a lot of that information as attachments on your program with several times that Bill spoke about it.
Yeah, just amazing.
Phenomenal stuff, really phenomenal. And I said to Bill, I said, Bill, is there any aspect of this that you've been told you can't go into? And he said, the Navy gave him the green light to do everything except they did not want him to use any email. He said, that was the only restriction. And I said, Bill, if that's the only restriction, abide by it. And they said, I'll milk information to you. I'll send jump drive data to you, to Bob Wood, and Bob would share it with him. And we got information to him. But he said the Navy never stopped him from coming forward with us. And he made it known to me up until the time that he passed. Jeff, he was still working on secret projects for design craft for Solar Warden. His mind was that active that he was still up until the end.
Right. Right. Just astounding. And I think he developed such an enormous worldwide following with his revelations and his uncanny ability to explain things in such an unpretentious but brilliant way, the way he talked. Just a real, unique, completely original. There's only one William Tompkins.
There's only one.
Absolutely.
When I called Mary today and let her know that we were thinking of him, she told me she got up early this morning and went to church with her daughter and had memories of Bill, as she does every day, and lit a candle, and she came home. Her daughter went to work, and I called her, and she was very happy to hear that you and I and George and others were sending our condolences to her and respect. And she said, Frank, she said, I think the world had forgotten Bill. And I said, no way. Mary had not forgotten him. No, none whatsoever. And I said, if I'm the only conduit, and Jeff's a conduit, he touched people's minds and hearts all around the planet with this remarkable light.
Oh, absolutely. When you look on the homepage, on the right side down under featured stories, you don't have to go down too far and you'll find William Tompkins right there. You click on that where it says click here and you'll go to a page that has basically the entire William Tompkins archive. It's quite extensive. Many, many hours of radio. Lots of hours of radio. And
Jeff,
go ahead.
I just wanted to share with you, Bob Wood told me that you have the most comprehensive library of Bill Tompkins material. He said that Bill shared things on your program that Bob Wood wasn't even aware that Bill was involved in.
No, that's amazing. Well, he would call occasionally, and we would speak off air, and always just a pleasure. Always just wonderful.
Yes. Always a gentleman.
Somebody, I don't know who, mentioned something about it, but and I reminded them that Bill and Mary used to live up here where I am in the same the same area. And he built two homes here at one point and had a wonderful anecdote about some kind of a weird encounter in Southern Oregon that they all drove to. Yes. And just really...
The Hunting Lodge.
The Hunting Lodge anecdote. Yeah. Let's, just for fun, play a little bit of one of Bill's visits here. And I'll just play it from the beginning. The intro is not too long. But you'll hear this wonderful man's voice, and I think you'll get the idea. And hopefully you'll go down to that section and listen to more of his visits here. There are lots of them. So here we go. Tonight is a remarkable friend of ours and a friend of yours. His name is William Tompkins. Bill has been a guest a number of times. And if you look on the right-hand side of our page for you, rents.com, you'll find an entire section about Bill Tompkins and our former conversations. Tonight's will be another one. It's a whole journey. You can jump in on each one of them and be taken on a little voyage that your mind will thank you for. Extraordinary things are discussed and talked about. Things that maybe aren't supposed to be talked about, but they are. And Bill is not about to slow down at this point. Remember always that when you think about outer space, inner space, the oceans, the seas, the land, doesn't matter if there's water around it. And there's something going on with respect to the military, private operations, hidden operations, ultra top secret operations. It's almost invariably the Navy, the U.S. Navy, the U.S. Navy in outer space. It's here. The U.S. Navy is everywhere. And many of you have been to Palm Springs. It's a remarkable place. You look almost seemingly straight up and you have enormous mountains right there, Mount San Jacinto, and very pretty. It's also, interestingly enough, the subject of part of our conversation tonight, and I can't wait to find out what Bill Tompkins has to say about San Jacinto. Hello, Bill. Welcome back. How are you?
Hey, I'm great. Looking forward to the program.
Good, good. And now, for those of you who don't know, Bill has a background that we've covered many times, and I hope you'll go back and listen to the programs and understand that this man has lived through history like few others have. He also happens to have lived for a long time where I am, which is, we've had a lot of very interesting, well, no coincidences, remember, but unusual connections. And it's always fun to talk to Bill. It seems like an old friend. And in many ways, I guess we are friends. Bill, what have you heard from people who have listened to the earlier programs? What are you getting in terms of feedback? What kinds of comments from people?
Oh, kind of interesting, really. Getting calls from France and getting calls from Russia and
really?
The United States, but
wow.
Amazing. And all your efforts to get the program around the planet are certainly successful, and I'm amazed. It's extremely interesting.
Well,
the feedback that we're getting.
Yeah, that's nice. It is true, and I've
been aware of it vaguely, but this program is listened to literally worldwide. And wherever you are in the world, we really appreciate you being there. And what we have to offer you, I think, is of great interest to you, or you wouldn't be listening. Our Russian listeners, we have a huge audience in Australia, Great Britain, all around the world, people who are realizing at long last that things are not as we are being told. And they're listening to people like Bill Tompkins, who's one of a kind. Tell us what's really happening. At least give us information that we can think about and process and come up with our own decisions. We know one thing, unequivocally, and that's that the government and the military will always lie to us. That's just the nature of the beast. They will not share. So good, Bill. People in Russia calling. Very interesting.
Well, it just seems like maybe what we should do is back off just a little bit and kind of open this program up. There's one real important thing I think we all need to. We need to address it. We need to try to relate to it.
Sure. Go to it.
This universe is a very, very big place to be. Okay?
Yeah.
As many as 200 billion galaxies exist out there. We didn't talk about planetary systems like the solar system.
Now, these are galaxies like the Milky Way. These are galaxies, 200 billion, at least.
At least 200 billion. And then we have billions of stars in our own galaxy, the Milky Way. Oh, my gosh. And so for us to take this approach, which unfortunately we've been lied to, like you've said, that there's no other people out there in the universe but us, it's kind of naive.
It's ridiculous is what it is. It's absolutely absurd to even say something as dumb as that. Good Lord.
200 billion galaxies, all with over billions of stars. My gosh. And these stars, most of these stars have planets.
Yeah.
Like the little solar system that we have.
Right.
Some of them have two stars. Some even have three stars. That would be a hard place to live. You wouldn't
really
know whether it was day or night.
Three suns.
Yes.
How wild would that be? A binary would be tough enough, but three? Yeah. Wow.
Wild. But just to think that we're part of this situation and that people have been cruising, certainly not just the Milky Way galaxy, all of these other galaxies for probably billions of years. And so we're just touching the tip of the iceberg when we're talking about this subject.
Yes.
And I think people should write that number down and every once in a while just look at it and stop and think of what we're now visualizing. We can go out into the desert or we can go out of town and just on a nice clear night look up at the sky. There's hundreds of thousands of stars that we can see. Oh my gosh. You know, it's fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
Even astronomy is fantastic. And our position in this is unbelievably more important than maybe we think. But we are just now learning what's going on. And I think that the more we can discuss this whole subject, the better we all are going to be. And sort of tonight, I don't know what you folks were going to say, but I would sort of like to talk about the galaxy itself. And
that's fine.
A little bit.
Yeah.
A little bit about where we are in it. And essentially, the situation of, say, hypothetical cases where you will accept that other people are out there in the galaxy. They're cruising the galaxy. Some of them are just grandchildren with grandma and grandpa on a cruise galaxy ship, cruising the galaxy, having a ball. Others are coming here, they take a look at us, they don't pay much attention, and they go on to the rest of their cruise.
So it's tourism exists on the basis that you're describing it. I've often poked fun at that knowledge that people coming here as tourists would see quite a show on this planet.
You're right, really. And I think maybe when they could just look at how we don't necessarily get along with each other, they could be laughing all the way to the next part of the galaxy.
I agree with you.
This could be fun. And
how many galaxies again? Now, keep in mind when you look up at the Milky Way, friends, and it stretches from horizon to horizon, a band of these bright, concentrated dots of light. That's our little, relatively speaking, galaxy. It's an enormous place, this galaxy. How many galaxies, tell them again, that we know about or can project are out there in the known universe?
We have over 200 billion galaxies, all of them with billions of stars. And I think this is really important to address. To get ourselves out of this everyday thing that we're forced into and stop and think that we now have this opportunity, for instance, to join with other Nordic people and go out into the galaxy with them. Not all that stuff about the wars going on and all the bad side of it, but stop and think of our opportunities. We're just around the corner. We will be able to cruise ships out in the galaxy ourselves. I just think that it's invigorating.
In our Milky Way galaxy, wouldn't that be wonderful to be able to take a cruise through the Milky Way? Wow. And that's probably being done, as Bill is saying, by other intelligent forms of life in this galaxy right now. Would it explain certainly some of the enormous craft that we've seen in our atmosphere down near ground level. Enormous craft, huge craft. And think of the Phoenix Lights. These craft are over a mile wide, some of them. Just enormous. And they could be cruise ships, for all we know. It's true. And it is an amazing thing to contemplate. We're kept, Bill, in such a little mental prison by the controllers of this planet. We have a birthright to know about what you've just mentioned. We have a birthright to think about the absolute enormity of 200 billion galaxies, each with billions of stars like our own sun. We don't think about that. We're not talked to about that. We're not told about that. We're not encouraged to ponder that. We're encouraged to feel subservient, trapped in debt, and under great stress all the time in this little microcosm we call planet Earth.
You like ads? I don't. That's why we created Ad Remover. It's a product that makes it so you...
Okay, let's pause there. We don't want to hear the commercial on that. Now, Frank, that was vintage Bill Tompkins. Wonderful.
It certainly was.
Wonderful voice. You hear the almost mirth-like quality of his soul coming through and his intellect and his knowledge. And this is a man who had...
His enthusiasm was always prominent.
Perfect word. Yeah.
Yes. And no ego. No ego. I found no ego in any of the discussions I've ever had. None whatsoever.
No. George, hearing Bill again, how do you feel?
Oh, it's wonderful to hear his voice. And like Frank, I used to talk to him, you know, on a regular basis. And people don't realize that he held important positions in many companies, like 12 years as an engineering section chief at Douglas Missile and Space Divisions, and also worked... space research and chairman of the Advanced Space Concept Staff at the think tank at TRW. I mention these because they're important positions that he's helped build many important, you know, aircraft and spaceships all through his lifetime. Spaceships that obviously we're not told much about and only recently has information started to come out. But I will say this, if you get out your binoculars and start looking at the stars, you might be surprised to see what kind of spaceships are up there. There's a lot more than just the international spacecraft. That there's other craft up there, just says.
The ISS is continually, routinely visited by things that we're not told about. And there are pictures. Sometimes I think that the video is all delayed now, but there were a lot of times early on when they had a live feed up there that people would see things coming by, stopping, turning around, reversing direction. Yeah, of course.
And I've had, several astronauts confirm this, that they've been told, to get ready to take a picture of a spaceship as it goes by, and it goes by so quickly that they can't even get a picture from the shuttle and so on. In other words, there's a lot of information that's being leaked in recent years, and it's exciting to know that these kind of craft are there, and that Bill had something to do with developing them and building them and so on.
He was also, Frank, involved with systems, concepts, and designs. And tell our listeners about this flow chart that Bill did again. And you have to understand.
Well, Rockwell Integrated Space Chart,
right?
Which Colonel Ware sent me a copy of it, and this was probably about maybe 5 years ago, 4 years ago. And he said, Frank, I want you to share with Bill Tompkins and Bob Wood and Michael Sala. He said, they need to see this. And I called Bill up, and I called Bob, and I let them know what I had. And Bill said to me, he said, are they releasing that now? And I said, well, Colonel Ware wanted you to see this. And he said, well, if they're releasing this now, we're very, very close to disclosure. Bill told me he worked on the original genesis of this back in the early 50s at Douglas. Mm-hmm. And his concept of this was for a rollout to travel not only to our moon, but out into the solar system and out into the galaxy. And the flowchart was begun by Bill. The original he had up until the time he passed, it's now in the hands of Bob Wood. It's 6 feet wide, 6 feet long and 3 feet wide. And it is a comprehensive chart of every aspect that you need to go through before you go from one completion of activity in space to the next. And Bill was the brainchild for this. And Bob Wood got it, and he said, Frank, he said, everything on this chart was accomplished decades ago. And he said, Bill's concept was for this to be read in a horizontal format for the mind to be able to assimilate it because it's so complex. And Rockwell refused to do it and follow Bill's instructions. They wanted to do it in a vertical format. And Bob Wood said, he said, Frank, when you look at it, don't you agree that Bill was right, it should be in a horizontal format? I said, absolutely. And he was so happy to receive this. And I've shown it to people. There were one guy's an FBI consultant. He said he's never seen something as densely compacted as this. It's as profound as this. And I've showed it to other scientists and things. They're just blown away by it.
You can find it. Concept. You can see the flow chart. Go to William Tompkins on the right side. Click on the link to his archive. And scroll down, a third of the way down the page, and you'll see it right there. It says the Rockwell Integrated Space Plan Chart, PDF.
Yeah.
It's right above the word YouTubes, okay? And it's right there.
Jeff, when I received that, I called Colonel Ware, and I said, Donald, I always thought they were maybe 75 to 100 years in advance of what the public knew. He said, no, Frank. He said, there are about 1,000 years in advance. And I told that to Bill, and Bill agreed 100%. He said, yep, there are about 1,000 years in advance of what the public knows. And this chart proves it.
Well, it would have been, I think, better in a horizontal format, but it doesn't matter. It's overwhelming. It's truly
it is
overwhelming.
Overwhelming. All right, here's it represents thousands of man hours.
Oh, yeah. It's crazy. All right, here's a little bit more of Bill and Jeff right now.
Well put. really astounding. And
I'm going to back this up just a drop. There was a commercial on the way, and see if I can get past it. All right, I think it was here.
Well, there's about the wars going on and all the bad side of it, but stop and think of our opportunities. We're just around the corner, and we will be able to cruise ships out in the galaxy ourselves. I just think that it's invigorating.
In our Milky Way galaxy, wouldn't that be wonderful to be able to take a cruise through the Milky Way? Wow. And that's probably being done, as Bill is saying, by other intelligent forms of life in this galaxy right now. Would it explain certainly some of the enormous craft that we've seen in our atmosphere down near ground level. Enormous craft, huge craft. And think of the Phoenix Lights. These craft are over a mile wide, some of them. Just enormous. And they could be cruise ships, for all we know. It's true. And it is an amazing thing to contemplate. We're kept, Bill, in such a little thimble, a little mental prison by the controllers of this planet. We have a birthright to know about what you've just mentioned. We have a birthright to think about the absolute enormity of 200 billion galaxies, each with billions of stars like our own sun. We don't think about that. We're not talked to about that. We're not told about that. We're not encouraged to ponder that. We're encouraged to feel subservient, trapped in debt, and under great stress all the time in this little microcosm we call planet Earth.
Beautiful. Well put. Really. It's astounding. And actually, what we're going into, instead of being negative, it's going to be a lot of fun. You're going to enjoy what takes place.
I'm ready.
I'm ready to go. I'm ready to sign up right now.
Well, Bill, if you don't know, Bill Tompkins is 93, proving once again what I have always said. It's just a number. If you take care of yourself, if you eat right, and perhaps have the kind of connections that Bill has, there's no reason we can't live far longer than the average person. I saw something today. Someone died, someone of note, 52 years of age, some TV actor. Come on. That's being robbed, cheated. We should go 80, 90 easily and be in full control of our faculties. And you said this could be so much fun. I'm going to put a sign out on my lawn. I'm ready. land here, whatever. There are a lot of people listening who are probably saying much the same thing. It would be wonderful to get off this place. The change in our perspective and our hopes and dreams would be instantaneous. And a lot of people, contactees, abductees, have had that experience, for better or worse. And there are people out there listening right now who know the truth. It's like having, which I did, I call it an after-death experience. When you realize that there is no death, when you get off this planet and realize that there is life everywhere. It's an instantaneous change that you can never retreat from. Go ahead, Bill.
Well, I agree with you 100%, really. The fact that we're in this learning curve, which is right now going straight up across the charts, we're being exposed to reality. We're being we're learning what we should have learned in the university and in the schools, but it wasn't taught because these people were controlling us and giving us a difficult time. I think that trying to get out of this atmosphere and into the positive side, there's a lot of really wonderful things taking place and trying to put this thing together. When we talk about the galaxies and we talk about the numbers of people or different civilizations that could be out there, actually we need to look at our opportunities and the situation with certain extraterrestrials who are assisting us. And I hate to go back to just a couple of three people back at Douglas on the Apollo program, but I have to sort of address that because these three people that were helping us were Nordic people, essentially our cousins, if you want the truth. And they come from a different part of the arm of the Milky Way galaxy that we're all in. Mm-hmm. And incidentally, we're way out of the boonies. I mean, our location in this particular Milky Way galaxy, we're like out on the tip of one of the arms of the galaxy.
Yeah.
We're not downtown where all the action is. And so, come on, I mean, and so the opportunities are tremendous. And so to address these three Nordic people whose trust was nothing negative for nearly 4 years, they wanted us to be successful on the Apollo program. And when we talk about the Apollo program, I don't like to repeat things, but I think it's something that's important.
Fine,
because
it's fine to repeat.
Just going to the moon was not the Apollo program.
Mm-hmm.
The Apollo program, phase one, was to build a 10,000-man naval research and operating base on the moon, only it was inside because we were going to build it underground. That was phase one.
Mm-hmm.
Phase two of the Apollo was to build naval stations on every habitable planet in the solar system or their moons. Okay? Phase three was to do exactly the same thing on the 12 closest stars. We just explained the real Apollo mission. So when we're trying to put together requirements for the vehicle or for the launch vehicle or for the mission,
mm-hmm.
we're not just addressing getting there. We're addressing all the things that we need to do because these are stepping stones for phase two and phase three.
Okay,
so when we got shot down, go ahead.
A question for our listeners. So hold that thought, when we got shot down. A question for our listeners. I think what you're clearly putting on the table is the simple fact that the NASA Apollo program, as it was presented and marketed to the public, was essentially a diversion. The real program was on a second track, completely hidden. The shuttle program was a diversion. The tragedies were not planned, but they happened. This is a real interesting field for all of you who are perhaps new to Bill Tompkins. There is a whole other aspect of man in space that we have never been told about, that Bill is telling us about and sharing with us. And that's important to keep in mind. What you're fed in terms of normal information from the government and the military often bears little resemblance, if no resemblance, to reality. Go ahead, Bill. He said, when we got shot down, what did you mean?
Okay, what I meant was, when the Draco reptilian people who were already there essentially told us, go ahead and finish four more of your missions and don't come back.
On the moon.
Okay? On the moon. Now, let's back off a little bit on that part. That's not your moon. Wait a minute. Everybody says it's their moon. It's not even a moon. It's a space vehicle, which is parked. They had a great big pickup truck. They went out there and pulled this thing that we call a moon back into the solar system.
Uh-huh.
And then they pointed it at us. Now stop and think that really the moon doesn't rotate.
No, and it's bizarre. It's just absolutely fixed in its position to Earth, and it shouldn't.
Everything else in the universe rotates. Except this is a command center for a number of different extraterrestrial civilization people. And it's not just the reptilian base. It's probably 30 or 40 different types of extraterrestrial who are operating in that particular, what we call planet. It's just a vehicle which has been parked there. And it's controlling this region of the tip of this arm of the Milky Way galaxy. And so when you look at your moon, which is not yours, and then you stop and think that, wait a minute, maybe this is not your planet either, because a whole bunch of people are out there using this planet as a laboratory. So in the Apollo program, those two wonderful young ladies and that healthy-looking Nordic guy who helped us on the Apollo program to make it successful for nearly 3.5 years, I think that all of the discussion for those periods of time when these three people never made one negative comment, everything was plus. Everything was for accomplishment, developing it, methods. And yes, they are very smart people. They come from a different part of the Milky Way galaxy. They were here to help us. Join them out in the galaxy and help us fix our own planet. These were the missions. These were what these people were doing. And there wasn't one single time in the entire time that there was anything negative. Everything was plus. And to realize that you had these three people, even though most of engineering did not accept they were extraterrestrial and it was a big joke, they really were, and they really did accomplish the basic problem areas on the program.
Okay, William Tompkins, and there's a good listen. All these programs are available for you to listen to anytime you'd like, so go and enjoy them. They're there. They're right on the homepage. Frank, anything you want to add to this?
It's just a joy to hear his voice again, and the simplistic way that he describes very complex subjects.
Yeah.
It's just really remarkable, I truly miss him. I truly miss him.
George?
One thing Bill told me that people probably don't realize, I think everybody or many people have seen pictures of the NASA launch, and he had a lot to do with the actual craft. Mm-hmm. They went to the moon, but he also designed the command post where they set up and did the actual launches.
Yeah.
That before that, it was kind of a weird-looking thing, and he designed it. He had this inner thinking, or in some ways, I think it was, aliens or some kind of a...
He was getting input from somewhere, I think.
Right.
Yeah.
He was getting tips on what to do, and whenever he thought about certain things, great insight would come, and he would be able to put that into operation and help build these spaceships. And
well, he took the whole design for a new launch command and control center to Dr. Debus at NASA, and they built it.
Right.
That's right. They ran with it, yeah.
So,
the point is that they did so many things that, you know, was important to the country and for our advanced capabilities in space that people just don't know about, frankly.
You know what's really amazing? That wonderful lady, Mrs. Tompkins, Mary, is listening right now, and she was all the way, step by step, right with Bill through all those years. It's just remarkable.
Yes.
So, Mary, glad you're out there, and you take care of yourself. We love you, And we miss Bill, but I think you'll see Bill again. We all will. So you be well. Take care, Mary. And thank you, Frank, very much, as always, for being here.
My pleasure. My pleasure.
All right. And Gentleman George, stay out of trouble.
Okay.
say hi to Janet, and we'll talk to you soon.
Right.
Okay. Good night.
Good night.
All right, that's hour number two in our little tribute to Bill Tompkins. 1 year ago today, Bill moved to the next level, and he's doing fine. We'll be back in just a few minutes.